Well, hello there. You are listening to Stirring the Pot on Voice of Vashon 101.9 FM LP. Right here in downtown Vashon, Washington, I'm Linda Nygaard, and with me is...
Tom Conway.
Tom Conway. Hi, Tom.
How you doing?
I'm well, thank you. And we also have Mr. Truman O'Brien at the helm.
Sitting here behind the big blue switch.
Yep, by the big blue switch.
He's our scientist.
We have a whole new control system in the studio, and Tom and I are just sitting here going, oh my goodness, it's sort of like NASA to us.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but who knew that equipment could be sexy?
It's exciting. You know, it's got blue lights, and I see some red lights, and it's a fancy, fancy situation.
I'm ready to lean back in my chair and go, take off. 10,
yeah,
9,
just take
8, 7,
off.
6,
Where are we going 5. This time?
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's been a while since we've been in the studio together.
Oh my gosh.
One thing after another happened over the last month. And so I'm just really pleased to be back because it was a long, grueling month. And what we know is all is well now.
Excellent.
And that's all that matters. So
it is really, you know, not that we don't need travesties and horrors in our life, but when you have things that are, you know, when things that just are bumpy, when you go south, you have a bumpy road. It sure makes you appreciate like anything. Like, have you ever run out of gas? You'll never do it again, but it makes you appreciate having a full tank of gas.
I know. I remember one time, if your battery goes dead.
Uh-huh.
Because I remember one time I was down at Crow Beach feeding the crows. Mm-hmm. And it was a kind of sunny, beautiful day. And I don't know why, but I left my key on in my car.
Ruh-roh.
And then I got ready to go an hour and a half later after feeding a whole bag of potato chips to the crows.
We're going to get letters on that.
I know. Well, maybe
it was gluten-free. They were gluten-free chips.
No, it was actually peanuts.
Okay.
That's because I always stop at IGA and get that peanut thing. Okay. So that's what I fed them. I just thought potato chips because I want some.
Yeah.
Anyway, I called my friend Tom Conway, who lives right up the road.
Right on, sister.
And I said, help. And Tom Conway came right away and charged my battery for me, which, you know, that's one of the luxuries of living on a small island and knowing who's who and where they live.
It really is. You know, it also is true about who you can call and who you can't.
Well, there were other people I didn't call.
I had somebody a little while ago say, like, I was talking to somebody else about emergency contacts. They said, why am I not your emergency contact? I said, because I would be a bucket of bones by the time you picked up your phone. You know, you never answer your phone.
Well, I have an opposite story of that. And someone asked me, someone who's like really a flaky kind of person, whom I like, you know. But she said, would you be my emergency contact? And I said, I think you could find somebody better because, you know, who knows what is going to define the emergency.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Hangnail.
We have to be discerning and establish our boundaries sometimes.
Well, that's very adult-like of you.
Well, it was. And it wasn't a rude thing and nobody was upset. And we kind of laughed about it.
And you knew the person could handle your rejection.
Yeah, I would never say that to a person who couldn't handle it. You know?
You're not really that important to me.
Yeah, it's just, no, find somebody else.
Nah.
You know, it sounds really snotty, doesn't it? But it wasn't. We're friends.
Okay,
and
good. Still.
I can call her a flake in front of her and it works.
See, that's you what know? You need,
so
that kind of friend.
It's fine. Yeah. So, it was a cloudy, cool morning this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I got inspired.
Boy, howdy, did ya.
Yeah, I had some sour cherries in the freezer. And I thought, you know, I think I'll make a cherry pie. And I did. Mm. And so, what's the verdict? We've tasted it here.
It is a solid cherry pie. She brought it in this sweet little pie box her kids gave her one Christmas, I think, or birthday. And she sliced it up and apologized that it was warm.
Because I didn't get the lead. It was not warm.
It was bloody hot.
It was actually hot.
It was hot. Man. It's because I didn't get the lead out this morning. Oh. You know, I thought, you always think you have more time than you do, you know?
It's so good. It really is. I'm the first one to, you know, like go, oh yeah, that's really nice. No, it's an outstanding pie.
You hit
all the right, I don't know. You know how it's the sum of the parts. A pie is the sum of the parts.
It is.
The cherries are tart. Mm-hmm. I didn't break a tooth on a pit. That's a plus. And the crust is exceptional. Yeah.
You know, crust is a conundrum for a lot of people.
It is.
And I didn't have any lard. I didn't have any leaf lard, so I just used all butter. But I am a proponent of big, thick crust. I don't like to roll it too thin. Like some people like to roll it very thin. I like it thick. And then they always say in the recipes to trim off the ends when you're doing the fluting on it, you know, trim it off and make that flute real light. And I fold it under there and I get a ridge. It's like a ridge.
It also acts as sort of like a cherry syrup dyke. So when it's bubbling, instead of going into your oven and making a mess, it bubbles up and is held back by the rickrack crust.
And then it soaks into that rickrack crust.
Totally.
And then you got a really delicate bite of something lovely. I also like to leave chunks of butter in it, much bigger than recipes call for.
Well, you know, I think, isn't there a movie where every time you use butter in a pie crust, an angel gets its wings or
is
something?
Is that right?
Yeah, I think it is.
Or they start singing or something.
Exactly.
So, well, we all had a little piece.
I tell you, your crust, though, it's like a cookie almost. It is so light
and
delicious.
It's a kind of a shortbready thing, isn't
it? Yeah, that's it. Exactly, yeah.
But, you know, it's just a regular recipe. It's just more butter.
Yeah.
There's more butter in it than
totally
any
works.
Recipe calls
totally
for.
Works.
Yeah. So
I know. I was almost thinking of, when you said you were bringing that, I was thinking, let's see, how long would ice cream last?
Well, I thought about ice cream too. And then I thought, we'll have to suffer and not have any ice cream. So, and we didn't need it.
We didn't need it.
Well, Tom, you discovered something about portability.
Port-a-potties.
Port-a-potties. Portability with regard to ice cream.
Oh, yeah. I saw this, I saw this thing, who knows, I'm sure it was on the internet, on the interwebs. And it was a new product somebody was pushing where it looks like a little bit of an oversized ice cream pint, you know, like a Haagen-Dazs size or Ben & Jerry's or,
a screw top lid?
Like a screw top lid. Uh-huh. And it's basically an ice cream cooler. And so you can bring a pint of ice cream with you. And you put it in this little container and then lock the top. And they said it'll stay, it's good for 4 hours.
And it will stay frozen.
Yeah.
Do you put it in the freezer first?
Container? No. Really? I don't think so. You know what? That's a good question.
I mean, love the idea of this,
Some of
you know?
Them you do. You can put it in the freezer. It gets it really cold first to start with.
And then there's that makes sense. Boy, yeah. I am remiss in not fully looking. I was just so happy there was
you could take ice cream along. It was so pretty
along.
To look at.
Exactly.
A shiny
and
thing.
And I can have ice cream whenever I want.
Yeah. Well, that goes right in line. In a little while, we're going to talk about some picnic ideas. And that goes right in line because, you know, if you have a pie for picnic, you need some ice cream with it. And really, ice cream's impossible to tote around.
Yeah.
So that's great to know. And it holds a pint. If you're going to have a picnic with a lot of people, you're going to have to buy two of those things.
Oh, God.
You know,
yeah, I'm...
Or five.
Five.
Yeah.
But you know what? I like my ice cream a little bit melty.
Yeah, I like don't my... You? I don't like it too hard.
No.
I think the flavor's better when it's just a little bit
melty.
Know,
melty.
If you have a Panasonic microwave, you turn it upside down. This is like a half gallon.
Yeah.
This is my formula for
softening.
perfect ice cream.
Yeah.
Yeah. Turn it upside down. For some reason, it likes to hit the bottom first.
Okay.
So when you turn it over, it hits the top first. And you just do 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely
perfect. Do you know the other thing with ice cream that you can do if you have a good vanilla ice cream? Like, I don't know who... There are arguments all over about who has the best vanilla ice cream. And I like Tillamook's vanilla ice cream.
I do too.
I love it.
And they have different choices. They have French, they have
old-fashioned.
They have old-fashioned and they have vanilla bean.
Vanilla bean, yeah. My favorite is French because it's custardy. It's a little more, it's eggy, a little more eggy.
And you're of the continent anyway.
Well, yes, of course. But the secret that you can do with that, and maybe this is like, everybody knew it but me, because I'm always late to the party. You can melt that ice cream. Like, just leave it at room temperature and let it melt, and you have crème anglaise.
Indeed you do.
You know, and you can serve it on your cake or on whatever you want to put crème anglaise on, and you don't have to worry about having to make it. It's so good. I've done it. It's a cheat, but It's all the same ingredients. Yeah. It's the same thing. You just melt it. So good. So we're in strawberry season now. We're just about through it, aren't we?
Indeed we are. You know, what's really great about strawberries, they have so many different varieties that they can really extend the season. But you're not going to have it much longer.
Well, the good ones are right now. Like, yeah. Really right now. Do you know, do we have any hood strawberries here?
Have
you?
I have been buying strawberries for a lot. I have my own strawberries, and, right. But I never have enough. So
I know.
Between the birds and me. Mm-hmm. And you can buy the plants.
Oh, those are the
I believe
best
they're June bearing.
They're early.
And they just do it all at once.
And they do it at once and that's it and they're gone. But I remember that from when I was living in Portland and they're Hood strawberries. Mm-hmm. And they come in and they're just there for like 2 or 3 weeks maximum and they makes my mouth water. They are absolutely the best strawberries I've ever had. Ever. So it maybe next year you'll plant
there's one.
Those.
Yeah, I could because, you know, the ones that I have found on my own sort of, you know, anecdotal research is that I've grown. And my favorite, it's an everbearing. So it's just it's almost a 2 or 3 week cycle of you're getting strawberries every little bit, not like a giant crop.
Right.
And Albion is a really good one to plant.
Okay.
Seascape.
Ozark, what a nice name.
Yeah, Ozark Beauty.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all ever-bearing or day neutral, so they're not affected by the light. They produce strawberries all summer.
Ooh,
and so, like I said, you're not getting like a Hood, or there's one called a Crimson Beauty that is commercially grown here locally that's mm-hmm. fantastic, mm-hmm. but it's like a 2 to 3 week window where, boom.
Get them, and then they're gone.
Then they're gone.
Yeah. So Tom, you were telling me earlier before we went on the air, I knew you were making some strawberry jam today.
Yeah.
And I think you should share the sort of method that you're using because I didn't know this method because I am just a Luddite when it comes to, Luddite is about technology, isn't it? Anyway, I don't make strawberry jam. Mm-hmm. So this is a whole new game for me in this way that you've made it. So tell me how you did that.
I usually rinse and clean the strawberries. Strawberries are something, if you buy them commercially, I don't even care if they're organic. And I'm not picky about this. Like I pretty much eat toxic vegetables all the time, but strawberries, I'm a little, there's a lot of stuff going on those puppies.
But you don't eat strawberries in Mexico.
No, you have to really rinse them and clean them and do all that stuff. So I put them in my salad spinner and then I drain them and then, take the cap off the thing. And so then I usually just slice them in half. So it's basically two.
Well, tell this recipe's origin.
Oh yeah.
Is a French.
Oh yeah, there's a woman I follow. She's sort of my most used cookbook because I make a lot of jams and preserves and compotes, and when I stumbled upon her, I went, oh, she does it like I do. Mm-hmm. Like she's not about rapid boiling and cooking the thing to death. She's more about a 2 or 3 day process, which sounds arduous, but it's not. What you do is you do it when you're in the kitchen and you put a timer on for 15 minutes and do the stage and then you shut it off and then you revisit it the next day, that sort of thing. So basically it's 2.5 pounds of strawberry sliced, 4 cups of sugar. And if you're gasping and going, oh my God, so much sugar. It's not so much sugar. So stop it.
And besides,
it's jam.
Get over it. It's jam.
And
it's
the other thing too is if you, the lesser... Sugar acts as a preservative,
right?
And you're not eating a cup of the stuff. You're using a teaspoon, teaspoon, 16 calories. Okay,
not a cup of sugar. I was thinking of a cup of strawberry jam.
No, yeah. So anyway, so you've got 2 pounds, 2.5 pounds, or a kilo of she's French. So Christine Ferber is the woman I follow her cookbook, and it's just fantastic. And she's really well known in the Alsace region of France for her preserve store.
I love how the French do that.
Yeah, and rightfully so. Her stuff is great. So she does it where you put 2.5 pounds, like a kilo, so 2.2 pounds of sliced strawberries, 4 cups of sugar, which is usually about 850 grams, and then a juice of 1 lemon. And then you mix that all up and you put it in your big pan. I use a big stainless, like if I was making pasta for six people, that kind of thing. I put it in there and I leave it overnight and I stir it and let it macerate.
Do you cover it?
You can cover it with a lid. She suggests you just use parchment paper.
Okay. Yeah.
But I find it's just as easy
so
with a lid.
So you let that sit overnight.
Sit overnight. And then the next day, you heat it up and you simmer it for about 5 to 10 minutes, stirring at all times. This is stuff that can burn easily, so don't walk away from it. Timer. Always use a timer with jam.
And don't put that burner on high.
So low, go low and slow, baby. Mm-hmm. And so then you get it. Low and slow. What I always make
stop,
it. I make it
stop.
Sound like a Teddy Pendergrass song or something. Or hey, baby, you want to make some jam?
We're jamming now.
That's right. Okay, we're yeah. So anyway,
okay, so next day.
So this is next day. You're simmering it lightly and slowly. You want it to be as fresh as you can.
So are we talking like when you're saying simmering, you're talking about little bubbles, sort of lazy.
Like butterfly kisses.
Yeah. Lazy simmer.
Exactly. Lazy simmer. And you're stirring. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, after
for how
about,
long?
She says 5, but really 10.
Minutes.
10 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
And then.
Well, that's not long.
It's not long at all. And then you let it sit. And when it's warm, you get a strainer and you take out all the fruit that's still solid.
Okay.
And you let it drain into that pan.
Okay.
And then, you let that sit. Sorry, you remember how we simmered it for 10 minutes?
Right.
And then you let it cool down.
Right.
And then you just put it in the refrigerator for a day.
Oh, so you're not taking the fruit out yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm sorry. And then the next day you take it out of the fridge and you heat it up again. Mm-hmm. Slowly and surely, and then you remove, because when it's a little warmer, it's easier for the liquid to come through the sieve.
Yeah.
And then you just have, all you have is basically strawberry syrup goo. And
in
you,
the pan that's left
and you,
in the pan.
Yeah, and you reduce it about half.
Okay.
And then the temperature of 221 is when it usually activates. There's not very much pectin in strawberries.
Right.
But what it does is the evaporation acts
and
in favor.
Sugar.
And the sugar solidifies it. So it becomes a syrup, a really luscious syrup. Then you put the strawberries back in.
Okay.
And so it's not like, you know, it's basically a jam that could stain any shirt you have because it's going to roll off the biscuit.
Yeah.
But it's really good. And then what you have is sort of this candy jeweled strawberry in this goo.
Oh.
So it's not like
it's like a what's that word that's conserve. It's like a conserve sort of.
Yeah, there's a so it's a little unusual. It's also great. You could throw it on ice cream or a cheesecake or or just a biscuit.
So then do you do the water bath thing and can
water
them and seal it and do
and
all
so
that?
So just because people always ask about how you do it, and I just want just sort of for like to pique your interest on how really easy it is.
Right.
You want small jars. Like I find when you're canning jams, use a half pint, use a cup because we aren't using preservatives. So you got all that trouble and then it will spoil in the fridge and you'll get mold quickly.
Yeah.
And so you just need a small amount.
And you can have two of them if you want.
Exactly.
You know?
And so this amount, this recipe makes about six cups.
Okay.
So six bottle jars.
You know, when I make my jelly, I put my jars in the dishwasher and put it on really hot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't boil them. I just
That works. It sterilizes
them. Jelly, not with jam.
Yeah.
And you have to make sure that you have new lids, new rubber lids.
Yeah.
The rubber has to be
exactly.
The rings don't have to be new, but the sealing part has to be.
So you put the fruit substance in those jars. That
right.
I put them in a water bath just to make sure they're sterile.
Right.
You know, I take them out, they're empty, and then I have a funnel for canning that is wide open, and the jam goes in there without touching the top, and then you make sure you wipe the top. You leave a half inch airspace or headspace between the jam and the top of the jar.
Right.
And then here's the important part.
Okay.
You put the lid on, and then there's a ring that secures it.
Right.
Most standard type of jars.
Yeah.
And so you don't tighten it.
Don't tighten
like
it all
your Xena warrior princess. You
right.
do a. Yeah. You do just a. You put. I put my fingers up high. Like I have arthritis, and I twist them just enough to
just
make it tight.
Just stops a little
bit. Because you need to let the air out in the boiling process.
Right.
And so you do that. You still want them to be tight. you know, so the water doesn't get in there, but not so tight that air can't get out.
Well, and in a couple of days you can tighten them.
No.
Oh, not ever?
No. No.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Are you having a heart attack? do you find that your lids go dink after they?
Yes.
I love that sound.
When you take them out, like it's 10 minutes of, I put them in the water, and once it starts boiling, it may be 5 minutes later, I'll do a count, do a 10 minute timer, and then you want to just sort of shut off the heat,
right?
So you get the steam, so you don't burn yourself with steam. It's pretty easy to do, and then you get your little clampy clutches and you pull it out of the water, and then you sit out on the counter or somewhere, and within like 5 minutes you'll hear clink clink clink,
pop, pop, pop.
And it's where the air is sucked back down because it's cooling off.
That's a very satisfying
and
sound.
What's really interesting, so those rings are totally worthless now. You don't need them, and they're loose. They're loose after that, and you just take them off.
It just doesn't feel finished without that ring on there. No.
Well,
when
I give them as gift, I put the ring on, because if you have them in the fridge, you want them to.
Right.
You want to be able to close them.
Right. Well, I love that recipe, and I'd like to try that at some point.
Oh, can I add one other thing?
Sure.
Here's another. I got this from a restaurateur in Los Angeles, who I had some of her jam, and it's crazy good, but very much like the Christine Ferbers. But what she did is she steeped. And it sounds sort of like, will that really work? Rose geranium. Rose geranium is geranium that has a scent like a rose, and you just put the greens in the
I've heard of that.
It really
and it was really good.
It works. It's not BS. You know how like people go like, oh, I love the taste of pansies. No, they
no, you don't.
Or I love rose petal jam. No, you don't.
No, you don't.
It just tastes like you got paper confetti in your jam. I mean, I'm not a fan of that.
Tom and I were talking last week about rose petal jam. And
we made faces at the same time.
We made faces and said, please don't ever make me rose petal jam. It's like, what? What? There's nothing to it. It's pretty to look at.
It's pretty to look at. But it's one of those things that's like the emperor has no clothes, at least in my opinion.
Well, it's so very sophisticated. You know?
Well, it takes like 2 tons of rose petals for like a half
and
droplet.
And you better get organic ones. Yeah. You know? I'd like to go back to the strawberry thing just for a second. I don't have a recipe, but there's a cake online that I found years ago, and I've made it several times since, and it's called Strawberry Dream Cake. And it's a 3-layer cake, and it has that whole process that you're talking about, but you macerate the strawberries in balsamic vinegar and sugar, and it makes the strawberry. It's just the wildest taste.
What are the layers then?
Well, then in the middle, that's what you layer between the layers of the cake. And the cake.
Cake, not a pie. I'm sorry.
Yeah, cake.
And pie in the mind.
It's a 3-layer cake, and so and the cake has from the liquid that's left when you're macerating these strawberries. Is sort of a glaze on the cake, and then you put the strawberries in there, and there's strawberry juice because there's another pan of strawberries that you cook, and that goes in the cake batter as the liquid, so it's a really beautifully pinky, dark pink cake. Oh my gosh, it's
good. That's a great addition to strawberries is balsamic vinegar.
Well, some people roast them with balsamic and use that to make jam.
Yeah, that's a good addition.
It's an interesting flavor combination.
Yeah. I have two things about strawberries.
Yes.
A friend many, many, many years ago, like in the early 50s, came back from Italy and she took some strawberry seeds, little tiny seeds out of the strawberries themselves.
Oh my.
And put them in a handkerchief.
Yeah.
And smuggled them in.
Oh my God.
So she had these little tiny seeds.
For Italian strawberries.
For Italian strawberries. She planted those things and they went crazy.
They did.
And so she gave some to my wife, who brought them home, and they went crazy at our house. And the whole place is covered in these little strawberries. Illegal strawberries, which makes them even better.
Yeah.
But they're little bitty guys, but boy, are they tasty.
Oh, I've had those little tiny
ones.
Just
really tasty.
They're so good.
They have a real strawberry flavor, those types. There's one that's kind of close to that you can get here. I know Lita Langley grows them on her farm, and she sells the starts. And it's called a Mara de Bois.
I don't know.
But it's like a forest berry.
Well, that's the thing. Those wild strawberries, they're so tiny, but they're so full of, it's a whole mouthful of flavor when you just have just one little tiny berry. Guys, yeah, they're wonderful. Well, you know, strawberries. So Strawberry Festival's coming up soon.
Woo-woo, yeah, baby.
And for those of you who don't know out there in Radioland, we have a festival every year. Called Strawberry Festival. And it seems like maybe the last couple of years there have actually been more strawberries available
there have been
at
some
the
efforts,
Strawberry
yeah.
Festival. Back in the olden days, Vashon was known as the strawberry capital of somewhere, everywhere. Not, I wanted to say the world, but I'm not sure that's true. I know that the Japanese had a lot to do with that, and they invented a way to to barrel them and keep them fresh, and they ship them all over, and so it's kind of a way to honor that. And
absolutely.
This year is a 100-year anniversary of Mukai Gardens, and they're doing I don't know where they're at in their schedule, but they're reconstructing the barreling plant. And so I would encourage people out there to go to Mukai and have a look around, because there's change going on there, and it's such a wonderful place.
Yeah, they're gonna the reinvention of the barreling plant is gonna make it a functional.
I know it's gonna, it's so a real deal.
Fernhorn Bakery is gonna operate out of there, and I'm not sure if there'll be a farmer's market in the winter out of there. You know, that's my own fantasy, but
Well, maybe you should direct that.
Yeah, okay. But I've heard there's some really great plans being conjured up about utilizing that building after it's been sitting empty for a long time.
For a long time. Yeah, I think it's marvelous. Yes, Truman.
I used to work with the forest stewards, and they have a molder shaper. They had a molder shaper.
A what? What
molder shaper for shaping wood.
Okay.
No one makes shiplap like the siding on the Mukai building. And we made shiplap for that building.
Wow.
So that it matches the original.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's what we call real restoration.
Indeed.
You know, it's not fake. That's wonderful. Cool, huh? That's wonderful. So this year, Strawberry Festival is July 17, 18, and 19. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And there are just going to be lots and lots of events and big music and lots of good food. And
it's a lot of fun.
It's very crowded. There, you know, if you're coming from over town, take your time.
Yeah. And you know what's great, though, is it's you just have to sort of use your schedule based on, if I had children, what would I be doing right now?
Because
like about nap time at about 3 or 4, like half of the people go away.
Right, because like, there's no kids.
Yeah, because kids need a nap or food or something.
Yeah.
And then there's the night, they have the street dance, which is fun.
And they have a big nightlife, you know, which is, I'm too tired by that time to go there.
Yeah, it's lucky I live about a mile away from it.
Yeah, so. I live very close to it too, so I can walk to it.
We can dance on my porch.
Yeah. Well, you can hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's a great celebration. So a lot of local exhibitors and businesses, and the food is always excellent. And I don't know what's in store this year for food, but I understand it's quite expanded from last year. And last year was pretty good. There were some big food trucks and some really interesting food. And this year it's going to be even bigger and better.
Yeah, so. I thought they had really good food last year.
I did
Lots
too.
Of different options. There
I
was
did too.
Even like
that
from
Thai
Filipino
food.
To Thai to there was Greek. And
then our regulars, you know. And then
exactly, our own people.
Ruby Brink did...
sausages?
No, they did donuts. They did apple cider donuts.
That's right.
That killed me. They had apple cider donut with cream cheese on it, topped with strawberry compote. Oh, Lord.
Was that Ruby Brink, or was that the cidery Dragon's Head?
I thought it was Ruby Brink because they were right in front. I'm pretty sure it was because
Well, they've got that donut.
Well, no, I'm lying. I think it was the cider house.
Because they have that donut on the menu.
They do that. Yeah. Apple cider. Yes, I'm sorry. It was cider.
As long as there's still a donut, we're happy.
Any kind of donut. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, but it was right in front of Ruby Brink.
Yeah, that's right. It was.
Yeah, that's where I got confused. So anyway, I encourage you to, you know, take part of that because it's parking is a nightmare.
Oh.
But, you know, get your steps in. Just go for a walk. Yeah.
And by the way, I did research your container.
Oh.
And the 1 gallon or the 3 gallon one it does say pre-freeze.
Okay.
Three so, gallons?
Yeah, it's a huge thing.
And oh, that's if you have a family reunion or something.
And it's and it also has three layers. So there's a gel layer, and then there's an air layer so that it doesn't sweat.
Oh.
Kind of interesting.
Wow.
Well, I think we should test one out.
We'll
Tom.
Test one out.
We should test one out. We can expense it.
Okay. That's right.
on our big, huge expense account. Do you remember the days of
I
expense
was just
accounts?
I was just sort of glazing over like, I can't even imagine having an expense account.
I know. I used to have one. It was really fun.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway. So the next thing I want to talk about is, I'm a little bit on events.
Sure.
This today.
You'll have no opposition from me.
Okay. So Piano Fit is coming up at Vashon Center for the Arts. Mm-hmm. And that is starting next week on Wednesday.
And as I recall, you had a really good time on that last year when you worked
at it. Oh, I had so much fun. I got to cook. You know, the musicians are, if you've never been, I suggest you call and get a ticket. I hope there's a few left. It sells out every year, every night. But the music is absolutely stunning, and it's mostly people from Russia. I think there's one that's not from Russia, but there are four or five pianists, and they play together sometimes, and they play solo sometimes, and they play classics sometimes, and they play newly composed music that maybe one of the musicians and one of the pianists has. Mm-hmm. It's very, and the staging and the setting and the beauty of the whole thing is like a pageant, really. It's I've been to piano concerts before, you know, kind of regular piano. I love piano music, but this is like a different world. Mm. And you should go. I'm telling you, you should go. And I am going to be cooking again this year for the pianists. And so what happens is they do their thing, and then, you know, by 9:30 or 10, whenever it's over, they're ready for dinner. Mm-hmm. And so Marsha Bruya and I and Jeff Carson are cooking for them again. And it was so much fun last year. They have a pretty strict diet. They don't like carbs because they need to keep physically fit, and they're all very slim and trim, and they're
even cherry pie.
Yeah, I can't. You know, we did bake a little for them last year, and they loved it. Yeah. And said, "If you're baking, Linda, we're eating it." So I'll see if they want some this year. But our menu is just going to be crazy good. We've got things like smoked pork chops and. We'll do flank steak, and mm-hmm. we're going to do some cold beet soup.
And everybody eats together?
It's a family meal. You know, at VCA, they have a little kitchen in the back, and there's a little tiny dining room. It's a little conference room, dining room slash. And so we serve it family style in there. And what ends up happening is there's lots of wonderful sort of culinary talk because they're from Russia. And so we talk about Russian food and we talk about American food, and they're friendly, wonderful, lovely people. So I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be, it's really an honor to get to do that for them.
Oh yeah.
And it's fun.
Crazy talent.
And then by the end, you're just exhausted. I mean, it's a lot of work.
Oh yeah.
Because we're cooking for four nights, and you don't get out of there till 11 o'clock at night or so, you know, so.
Oh, bad.
I'm
Do you run the menu over them?
No, we
them,
just surprise them. Okay. No, I mean, they eat meat. There's nobody's a staunch vegetarian. Okay. There might be one vegetarian, but we always have enough. If there's a vegetarian, there's enough food. And we usually do, you know, a cold soup to start, and then we do three different things, you know, a couple salads and some protein and sorbet for dessert. They do like that. That's okay, because that's not terrible.
I saw there the two men and two women this year, it looks
like. Yes. I think same ones as last year. Yeah, yeah. And this year, one of their sons is coming with them.
Do they have
from Russia?
Four pianos or two?
Two.
Two.
But sometimes four people play two pianos.
Okay.
And sometimes two people play one piano, and sometimes one person plays one
piano. Seems like calculus to me.
And then on closing night, on their grand finale, closing night is always something original and different. And last year there was lights and sounds and like fireworks and huge bass guitar things, and it was Wow. Stunning. It's a whole different ballgame.
Is it? Is this something they do around the country, or is it something they just start doing here?
You know,
or?
They just started doing it here, and okay. They love coming to Vashon. They love Vashon, and so they designed this thing they do for Vashon. It's for us.
That's great.
They don't do, this is not a tour that they mm-hmm. take on. They do go on tour, but for most of the year, it's my understanding that they're not together. Mm-hmm. And then they come here, and they rehearse till the wee hours, and they get their stuff together and do what it is they do because they love Vashon.
And when is this happening, by the way?
Next week.
Oh, my gosh.
Next week, starting on Wednesday.
Wow.
Whatever that date is. I don't have numbers in front of me. But Vashon Center for the Arts, and I highly recommend it. I'm sorry we can't all eat together, you know.
So it must be like the 8th of July?
Yeah.
Okay.
8th through the 12th, is it? Mm-hmm. I think.
8th through, yeah. Through yeah. The 11th?
Yeah. Yep.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday?
And Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's kind of, that's kind of what I really wanted to let everybody know, that I think you're really missing out on a special treat if you don't go. And they just love Vashon.
There is something crazy magical about live music. Especially mm-hmm. world-class live music.
Yeah.
Well, and they get such a charge out of doing it.
I know, they
do. You can tell they're laughing.
You can tell they're just having
just
so much
having
fun.
A blast doing mm-hmm. it.
And aren't they just beautiful?
They are incredible.
They're just beautiful incredible. People to look at. They yeah. are. They're no, just no. gorgeous. And then to watch their hands and the whole piano.
It is like they're like rarefied humans.
They
you know?
Are. They're kind of, I get all mushy about them, you know, because they're so sweet and they're so kind and appreciative and they love Vashon. So, you know.
Hey,
that's we right do too.
On. Yeah,
I guess that's why we live here. So, also wanted to talk a little bit about that. Vashon is finally open again. And Truman, I know you went there. Did you go today for lunch?
Yeah, I had. I did takeout, which I've never done there before. But
okay,
I did takeout and it's.
But they do have
wonderful.
Sit-down lunch too.
Oh yeah, yeah. Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, please to explain to people Vashon.
Vashon is called exclamation point Vashon. And this is a new restaurant called Asian Fusion. Mm-hmm. And it's run by a woman whose name is and she's from Thailand. And she has a huge background in Asian food. She worked at May's Kitchen for a while and a couple of fancy schmancy places in Seattle.
Where's her restaurant?
And her restaurant is over near the post office.
Okay.
You go, you know, you just, if you pretend you're going to the post office, there's some storage units on the other side of the street. And it looks like you're going to the storage units, but it's a restaurant. And yeah. they've just decorated
they've turned
it.
Those storage
darling.
Units, storage yeah. units, about four or five of them.
Into a restaurant. And it's darling.
And the decor inside is all a Western saloon.
It's Western saloon slash Asian.
Asian, yeah.
It's really interesting.
So it's on the east side of the post office.
Correct.
Don't ask me east.
Okay,
it
east side.
It is.
Left. Just take a left.
You know, that is one of the things here around being in Pacific Northwesterner is because we have such specific landmarks and mountains and stuff. You know, I think poor people in Seattle, although they should be able to figure it out, but parking, it always goes, no parking west of here, no parking
like,
north of here.
Like, where's west?
Yeah.
I know.
But
I
if
know.
They, hopefully they can look at Puget Sound and kind of figure it out.
One time my kids were coming to visit me, and it was when I first moved here, and we rented a big Airbnb for a family thing, uh-huh. you know, and they were coming from Portland and Seattle and, I don't know, somewhere else. Anyway, my son Ryan was... coming in. It was in the days before we had our phones with all of the directions, with mm-hmm. Siri directions, you know. I think we had Garmin at that point. Those little,
right,
remember
the,
those?
The little ad
little
hoc.
Thing. Yeah, the separate little yeah. thing. And so I had given him the address and he was at somewhere else. And he called me and he said, Mom, I can't find it. I don't know where you are. And I said, well, where are you now? And he told me where he was. And I said, well, just go towards the water. And he said,
you're
Mom,
on the island?
There's water everywhere.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah,
Lake
yeah.
Union,
well, that other
Portage
water.
Bay.
We live,
other
we live
water.
In a
Lake
moat
Washington.
With a moat.
Yeah.
Puget
so, yeah.
Sound.
And plus, I don't have any sense of direction to begin with. So don't say east okay. and west to me. Say left and right or in front of.
Okay.
Something
I will
like that.
Promise.
Because when I lived in Colorado, I always knew the directions because the mountains were always to the west.
Oh.
Always. I mean,
that's
unless
funny,
you're on the
I
other
think
side,
I
then
I would go
the
visit
east.
My brother in Denver and I could, didn't he? I would be so disappointed. Like, where the hell are the mountains?
You couldn't see them?
Uh-uh.
It must have been smoggy.
Yeah.
Well, that's odd.
It's because we were in like a flat suburban neighborhood.
Denver, they're on the west.
Okay. Yeah, they're always west. And Denver.
They call it the Front Range.
The Front Range, yeah. Foothills. Yeah. So let's see, what else do we have to talk about? Oh, we were going to talk about picnics.
Indeed we were.
You know, picnics. This is sort of part two of what we did last time. We were talking about barbecue, and we were going to talk about picnics and barbecue.
Totally.
But we never got to the picnic end of it.
No.
And I really am dedicated to picnics this summer. Mm-hmm. Simple. I don't care if you have a peanut butter sandwich and a banana. Call your friends, go find a table in the woods and eat and enjoy each other's company. Because there's nothing like being, I mean, we live in such a gorgeous place, and there's no reason not to absorb some of Mother Nature's blessing when we're eating and enjoying the day. And it doesn't even have to be, you know, it can be breakfast.
Absolutely.
I've had picnic breakfasts before too.
Now, this time of year, I'm always eating out on my, I rotate porches based on sun and shade.
Sure. Well, you have so many porches.
I am porch rich.
I like all your porches, Tom.
I'm porch rich.
Yeah, you are porch rich.
That's like those pioneers. They wanted some cross ventilation.
Speaking of pioneers, in the olden days,
when I was a girl.
Back when I was a girl.
Yes.
People loved to picnic in the cemeteries. And it was a big deal. And if you think about it, this is like in the middle 1800s, early 1800s. Mm-hmm. They would go always on Sundays. And the Victorians at that point would take linens and crystal and a big Sunday dinner and set up a huge table, and they'd have the whole family, and they'd have dinner or lunch, breakfast after church probably, with, you know, next to Grandma and Grandpa's grave.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about it, they did that for a couple of reasons, and it was not a macabre situation. It was a way to remember the ancestors and to keep the family together. But also, that was before there were beautiful parks. There weren't parks back in those days. So, you know, those cemeteries had huge, gorgeous marble sculptures and arches and gardens and flowers. And so it was a beautiful surround. So they did that. And it actually, especially on the East Coast in the United States, is experiencing a resurgence of that tradition. And there are a couple in Pennsylvania, there are a couple of cemeteries there that are doing fundraisers and yoga classes and all kinds of things at the cemetery.
That's great.
So I don't know if we want to go to, you know, we go to the old cemetery here. If you do go to the cemetery to have a picnic, I encourage you to please clean up and don't leave your mess. I mean, anywhere you go. Because that was one of the biggest gripes when they started redoing it, was people were leaving, you know, little trashy things around the graves. And that's just really a bad thing to do. But there's something kind of peaceful and lovely about the idea of having a picnic in the graveyard. There's little benches to sit at. And Truman, you look really puzzled.
Well, I'm just thinking, I mean, if you don't want to be on top of the graves.
No,
you, like,
but you'd be beside it.
Yeah,
kind of between them. And you can lay a blanket out and between them. And there's benches here and there. And no, you don't want to walk on the graves.
Yeah, you could get haunted. You know.
But, you know, if you picture those great big old graveyards, they had boulevards and wide roads. And there was plenty of room to do that. Our cemetery isn't particularly conducive to that. No. But I think you could take a sandwich up there and
take a sandwich. You could use a gravestone for a table.
I don't know. Truman, I might be in your camp with this one. I think it's fun to go through graveyards and ponder the lives of the people there.
I have a graveyard story.
We were
in Grand Falls, Texas, which is nowhere. And
where's that?
In West Texas.
West,
yeah,
okay.
Way out. Or maybe it was Barstow. Anyway, one of those little towns.
Okay.
And my grandmother wanted to find the grave of one of her ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
So the family spread out to look for this grave.
Mm-hmm.
And you would suddenly hear people laughing.
Oh.
And we'd go, what? And pretty soon somebody else would, wah, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
And finally we kind of got together and we said, what's so funny? They said, some of these gravestones are hilarious.
Oh, yes.
But one of them, no, five of them, I think, they all were identical. A little spire-like thing. There were four spires and then one big spire.
Mm-hmm.
And you read the first one and it says, Mrs. John Jones, Ethel and gave the dates.
Mm-hmm.
And the next one said, Mrs. John Jones, Betty. The next one, Mrs. John Jones.
Oh, my goodness.
No, gone but not forgotten. That was the other. Yeah, Mrs. Edith, gone but not forgotten. Next one, Mrs. John Jones.
Oh,
with the
my
dates.
Goodness.
There were four of them. And when you got to the last, it was Mr. John Jones.
Man.
We were dying.
He was busy.
Yes, we were dying laughing.
He was a busy man. Yeah. Well, I've often haunted graveyards. I love graveyards. There's a graveyard in Portland that is, it's a gypsy cemetery. Mm-hmm. And it's called Rose City Cemetery. And it's very old and it's very lovely. I haven't eaten a picnic there, but I might now next time I go down.
Well, I got one more for you.
Okay.
There is a high school class back in the East Coast somewhere, and
yeah.
And the teacher took all of his students at the first day of class. They went out to a cemetery, and he told them, and these are old graves.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
You know, way, way back.
Mm-hmm.
And he told each of his students, pick a grave, research that person. Your task for this whole class is to research everything you can find on that person.
Mm-hmm.
And the last day of class, each of those students had to be that person recite their history.
How fun.
Which is a brilliant, brilliant thing to do. It was a history class,
yeah.
Obviously. But the coolest thing was that he had this one young black girl, and she picked a woman who was obviously a slave.
Mm.
And she researched, and he said this young woman was very shy, very quiet. And she researched this woman. And mm-hmm. at the end, she became her. And he said it was a transformation.
Magical.
That happened to
Wonderful.
Her. Yeah, isn't that great?
What a great story. Yeah. Well, you know, one little more tidbit about
dead
graveyards.
People.
Dead people. My granddaughter said to me one day, I said, oh, let's go to that graveyard. And she said, oh, Nana, you and your dead people. So, okay, all right.
I just have my minor contribution to this conversation is the best gravestone I've ever seen was one that somebody had a picture of that said this person's name, and then in quotations below it said, I told you I was sick.
I told you, yeah. That's somebody like Will Rogers or something. It's somebody famous. Yeah, yeah,
well,
I've
no,
seen
it wasn't
that
Will
too.
Rogers, but it was, yeah. You're
it
right.
was, I don't think it was him, but it was somebody like that. So, you know, you could go have a picnic by Bruce Lee in Renton.
That's an odd little, well, not odd. It's just, it's so popular. It's
the grave.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I'm sure people are eating there.
Or
and then there's
Jimmy,
also Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah,
you know,
up on Capitol Hill.
He's in Greenwood, I think.
No, it's Volunteer. I'll look it up for you. But it's in up on Capitol Hill.
Yeah. 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 So anyway, that's we were going to talk about locations on Bashan for picnics. And I got a little sidetracked there, but thank you for your indulgence. I appreciate it.
I had about another 30 seconds, and I was
going to reach
over there.
His eyes aren't even glazed over
no,
yet.
No, not at all.
I've seen Tom's eyes glaze over before.
I was going to, since you were talking about picnic food and barbecues and mm-hmm. stuff, I had a really good, because now there are some people on the island growing oysters, you know?
I know.
And you can get some local, you can, I think, pretty soon get some local ones much more readily. But anyway, the person who hosted this dinner had, we're all taught how to shuck oysters.
Mm-hmm.
And so you shuck an oyster, it's on the half shell. And then we made a really beautiful compound butter. And compound butter, for those not familiar, it's you mix butter with herbs and mm-hmm. garlic and, you know, things that are suited to be together
mm-hmm.
and flavorful,
so
like thyme or rosemary or basil or garlic, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you roll it up like a cookie log. And then you, mm-hmm. you when it's all firm, you cut them in discs. And so what we did is we had on a big cooking tray, oysters on the half shell, compound butter on top, and then grated parm on that. And then you just put it in the grill and put the lid on. And then when the butter was melted and the liquid was bubbling, you took them out. They were so good.
What can you do? What does that have to do with a picnic?
Well, it was a picnic.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, it was a grill, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it was, how fabulous.
What do graveyards have to do with a picnic? Oh, I love the scrutiny with which I am targeted here.
Oh, yes.
Mine
poor
at least
Tom.
Has to do with food.
Well, my next subject is, what do we take on these secret picnics?
My next is changing a tire.
Should you get a flat tire while you're going on a picnic?
Can you eat on the hood of your roof?
No,
your
you
car?
Can eat on the rim of the tire.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it's a nice plate. Listen, I found, I made a...
You weren't impressed by my compound butter oyster
story? I am. Okay. I would love... And did you make a mignonette too?
Yes.
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 Oh, man.
That was for the ones that were just raw.
Raw, yeah. But if you're going on a picnic with oysters, mm-hmm. you have to have some raw.
Yeah.
I would think. I mean, I yeah. love oysters. Love, love, love.
The thing that was different about the minaret that I had never, which is this, like vinegar sauce.
Yeah.
Light champagne vinegar. Mm-hmm. But is you saute the shallots
right.
first mm-hmm. And then you shut it off and put the vinegar and the liquids in and let it, then you refrigerate it. And it really... adds a nice body to the to it.
It changes.
Totally does.
When it's in the fridge.
That yeah. is.
It's so good. You know, people, potato salad's always a wonderful thing for picnics. You know, people want to do.
Oh, especially if you leave it on the hood, if you leave it on your dashboard.
Get it nice and warm.
Really warm. Yeah.
Well, that's part of the thing, you know, because people get very hesitant about leaving the mayonnaise-based salad.
Yeah.
So I have made a... it's kind of a Greek potato salad and it has no mayo in it. And basically it's the same thing. I use red onions, some Italian parsley, a little bit of dill,
mm-hmm.
some Kalamata olives.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the little tiny yellow
tiny little potatoes.
Tiny
yeah.
potato.
Just a little potatoes.
Yeah, the little potato.
Okay.
And then...
little spuds.
And then make a vinaigrette for it, which is, you know, just wine vinegar and a little mm-hmm. Dijon.
Yeah.
And a little bit of dried oregano, maybe some garlic. Well, yes, some garlic and some olive oil. And mix that around and just let that marinate for a couple hours before you go. And
that's
it's
a good
delicious.
Idea for a picnic.
And if it's it, yeah. great for a picnic because
it can sit out.
It can sit out and it can be served at room temperature without any trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, picnics and potato salad kind of go together.
No one wants their stomach pumped.
No. Yeah. And then, I'm big on sandwiches. I love sandwiches. And I discovered a recipe last week for citrus marinated chicken. And it's just so...
I'm all ears.
It's just so simple. It called for chicken breast, but I'm a thigh girl. I like thighs better. So.
Indeed you are.
So I marinated boneless... skinless because I was gonna
yeah.
I'm trying to be
I'm with you good, on the thighs though
you know, they but hold I love moisture thighs. And... so you marinate, you just squeeze a couple of oranges, squeeze a couple of lemons, squeeze a couple of limes, add a little olive oil, some garlic, whatever sort of herbs you want to put mm-hmm. in there. I can't remember, I probably put rosemary. I put rosemary in it, and then marinate that overnight. And then grill it.
Mm.
It is so good. So you could grill it at your picnic or you could grill it ahead of time and make a sandwich out of it. Because I did that and I made a sandwich out of the leftovers out of not ciabatta, but one of those.
Like a focaccia?
Like a focaccia. Yes. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of lettuce and a little bit of mustard and all of that orange or that citrus flavor with a little bit of mustard. Oh, it was so good. And that's totally transportable.
That's a great plan.
And you could, you know, have your chicken for dinner and that evening, and then you have leftover chicken for a sandwich later. And the other thing that somebody told me about that I had sort of poo-pooed because I just thought this will never work.
Because you're a food snob.
Yeah, because I'm a snob. But I tried it, and it was very good. And it's a salade niçoise salad. So you just make, it's got the hard-boiled egg and the tuna and the lettuce and the onions and the olives.
Green beans.
And you just kind of chop it all up in, like, for a sandwich on a round bun or a long, like a...
Like a lavash?
Like a lavash.
Oh, yeah. Is lavash soft? No, that's
no,
hard.
No, lavash
that's
is hard. Crackery. Or you're thinking like pita would work.
That's what I'm thinking, pita. I'm also thinking like that one you roll up, like a roll up.
Like a tortilla?
That would work.
Yeah,
but
that
there's
would
another
work.
One that I think is a Scandinavian.
No, lefse.
Yeah, is that it?
No, lefse wouldn't work. No, you need a sturdy piece of bread for this because it's juicy.
Says the Norwegian. Okay.
Well, I know my lesson.
I know you too. If you were watching on TV, I got the look
you
of
did
poo-poo.
Not. You say that every time.
Lefse stick.
Oh know. Yeah, I have a lefse stick.
I do too.
My dad made it.
Oh.
And
now
my
I'm
grandpa
confused.
Made one. Oh, you have to have a special stick to turn the lefse over on the griddle.
Oh, I thought maybe to smack you upside the head.
Well, that works too. It depends on who the mother was.
Okay.
Whack! You might get it. If you're with your grandma, you will get it.
By the way, I was mistaken. They said that Jimi Hendrix was up on Capitol Hill. It's Bruce Lee who was up there.
That's what I thought.
Sorry.
But, you know, who am I to argue?
I'm sorry. But they did dig Jimi Hendrix up and move him.
Oh,
to the
that's right. Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah, they did. So anyway, back to this Nichoise salad sandwich. It's delicious. And if you make it the night before, which I know sounds kind of iffy,
yeah.
But make it the night before and don't put the lettuce in it yet.
Yeah.
But put everything else, the tuna and the oil and all that together. Make your little Nichoise salad all chopped up in a bowl and then...
Do you know, a counter to that, if you have people that don't like tuna, is you can do that with like make a Caesar salad and wrap it up.
And or chicken in there.
Chicken
would work too. And then wrap it really, really, really tight in, like squash it in the fridge overnight. And the next day, it's this heavenly thing. I'm so glad I discovered it. It's really, really good. And it's fairly healthy, you know?
Totally.
So it's portable and easy. And so you could have that. You could have a little potato salad. And I have to have baked beans, too, on a picnic.
Mm-hmm.
But and then we'll all just come to Tom's porch.
Perfect.
We'll bring the food. You provide the porch.
I got a dishwasher.
How's that sound? What's your favorite picnic food?
One of my favorite picnic foods, because it was the first time I'd never experienced this, and it was such a sweet memory, but I was living in Juneau, Alaska, and friends of mine had a cabin, as we used to call it, out the road.
Out the
OTR,
road. OTR. Sure.
Because there are certain ways, certain things where you were... different. There were four ways out, but you never got out because there was no way to connect. It was like they were all dead end because we were landlocked and waterlocked.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I went out to their cabin, and it was one of those beautiful late summer nights that just went on and on. And we go in, and they were all excited because they were going to make dough babies. Dough babies? Yeah,
like
dough babies.
Like fry bread?
So it's a very complicated recipe.
Okay.
Not.
Oh.
So they bring out their... we all had to go get alder sticks, you know, and for like if you were going to, you know, roast marshmallows.
Roast a hot dog or marshmallow.
Yeah. And you wanted it about thumb size or a little bigger. And so we'd strip them. We got the sticks and then they mixed up Bisquick.
Okay.
Just regular old Bisquick, like a biscuit, biscuit. Biscuit. Anyway, and so you have basically this Play-Doh, and you put it around. Of course, lots of conversation about how nasty it looked because you were molding this sort of half a hot dog bun over over the stick.
Oh, yeah.
And then you were rotating it over the fire.
Okay.
And you were baking it on the outside. So the outside would get all crusty and you didn't want it to burn. But then, and when it was ready, you could pull it off the stick and it would be cooked on the inside, or at least less doughy.
Okay.
And then you would stick a bunch of butter in it and like two or three tablespoons of jam in it. And it was called a dough baby. And you did it on an open fire. And God, it's one of the best things I've ever
eaten. Oh my goodness. I've never heard of
it
such
was
a
so
thing.
Much fun.
I was thinking you were going to stick a hot dog in there.
No, you can't.
You could, I bet.
You know, that is one of the things you could do if you were doing a main course.
Oh, well, that sounds pretty good. I wonder if we should try that.
We should. Or we could do s'mores and just use Reese's peanut butter cups.
Oh, yeah. I haven't had s'mores in a long time. Well, we're kind of running out of time here. And as usual, we haven't covered all of our intended topics.
Yeah, so.
But there's always next
time.
Don't
send us nasty texts or anything.
Yeah, don't send us any nasty texts.
We have a lot to talk about.
We do. And one of the things that we have to talk about is We are really, really going to do a new Facebook page. we say that every time for 6 months.
Fast forward 10 years.
Yeah, I'm going to do a new Facebook page. Mildred, it's going to be great.
Well, we just, it's a terrible thing to have. I have mental issues, I guess, and I just can't get that done.
Well, for some reason, it won't.
It won't let you post. We're locked out, and it's acting
stupid. You have a certain amount of enthusiasm about it, and you die after that.
I know, after a while. So thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you again in a couple of weeks.
Yes.
You've been listening to Stirring the Pot. Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure. And I hope all of you all go to PianoFit and go see everything that's happening during Strawberry Festival.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.